time. Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Friday, everybody. He's Adam Harahawk. I'm Sean Cantwell. Got just a loaded show today. So much stuff we have to get into. Of course, we have to mourn the loss of the Red Wings winning streak.
Yeah.
At the hands of, well, we'll get into that
a little bit.
Of course, unsolicited advice because it is Friday. And there's some college football stuff I want to discuss coming up here in a little bit because I think this expansion stuff has gotten a little bit, maybe a lot of it out of hand. But we start today with your Detroit Football Lions. And a burning question as we go into this season, something that's going to have to be reckoned with before this coming offseason, and that is the contract of one Jared Goff. You remember Jared Goff.
Oh, yes.
Got you to an NFC title game this year.
Yeah.
Has really had quite the career with the Lions thus far. Obviously, you're not moving on from him anytime soon. I don't think anyone is expecting that Hendon Hooker is going to be a part of this roster, necessarily going to be the starter for this team anytime soon, which really now, for what it's worth, with signing, if they do end up signing Goff to an extension, really makes that draft pick look pretty stupid. Not going to lie. You could have picked up any backup. In fact, you already had a backup on the roster. But if you don't think he's going to be the guy, why did you even waste the pick on him? That could have been another piece for your defense. But be that as it may, I know a lot of people are not exactly thrilled at the possibility of handing over a rather large chunk of change to Jared Goff. A lot of it, seemingly, is people who didn't like him when he came here. And are not happy with having been proven wrong ultimately about him. But it does seem like there is a little bit of resistance to making Goff, say, one of the highest paid guys in the league. But here's the good news. If the reports are to be believed coming from Bleacher Report, and even the prediction laid out there by SpotTrack, you're not going to have to worry about that. One of Bleacher Report's insiders has said there's a real possibility that Jared Goff ends up getting a contract closer to the 40 to 45 mil a year range.
Woo!
Which I think is a lot, which is rather doable for a lot of people, certainly. SpotTrack, where I pull all of my stats from when it comes to contracts and salary caps and things of that nature, their prediction is that Goff will get a contract in the $45 million a year range over four seasons. $86.5 million of that guaranteed at signing, $146.5 million practically guaranteed. And with what he's done for you, it seems hard to deny him that. It'd be a $20 million pay raise for him. And when you look at the current active QB contracts in the National Football League, there are nine that would be a higher annual average value, at least thus far anyway. He would be getting paid the same a year as Patrick Mahomes, who, as you'll remember, signed for a $500 million deal that basically will make him a chief for life.
And rightfully so.
But that would put him behind Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Jalen Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, and Joe Burrow, who currently tops everybody with $55 million. And I absolutely think it is essential here that you lock this man in as soon as possible. When you look at how many other people are in line for extensions going forward. Jordan Love is going to be up for a payday very soon. Kirk Cousins is a free agent. You've got Dak Prescott is going to need a deal. Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence. And most of these guys are going to get more than $45 million a year. SpotTrack predicts Trevor Lawrence to get $50 million. They predict Tua to get $55 million, Dak to get $60 million, Jordan Love to get $50 million. And then you've got Kirk Cousins, who's projected to get $33 million because, well, he's Kirk Cousins. Sorry. Hate to rain on that parade. Any Vikings fans might be listening to this show.
Both of them.
But it seems all the more imperative now to lock him in at that rate before the asking price does become something more in the $50-55 million a year range. Because if you're talking $40-45 million for Jared Goff, I would do it in a heartbeat. I would, without question, I would jump at that and lock him in for the next 4 years at that price.
A lot of people are agreeing with you. He is the man of the hour. I mean, they're chanting his name at Red Wing games. He is Mr. Detroit right now. What happens though when you sign him to this contract, and then, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road, we don't get close to a conference title game? Well, people will start saying, well, we overpriced for him, huh?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. Like, you're going to, I think, make it to one, maybe two more NFC title games over the life of that deal. And it's not like you're paying for a guy who's already over the hill. Jared Goff's only 29 years old.
Right.
Like, he's in, theoretically, the prime of his career. And these should be the best years of his career that we're in right now and coming into over these next 3-4 years. So it's not like you're paying for a guy who's completely over the hill.
Right.
I mean, certainly he's one who has his limitations, no doubt about that. But at the same point in time, he's a big part of why you've gotten where you are.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's really hard to argue against giving him a raise from what he had. Like, it's not exactly going to be setting the free agent market or setting the quarterback market by any means. But it locks you in under center and makes sure that competitive window stays open for another 3 or 4 years. Because it's imperative right now that you do that. Because you're the team right now to beat in the NFC North, and who knows how long that window's going to be open for you. Minnesota is not the Vikings of old. Like, they've still got to figure out if they're going to bring back Kirk Cousins, for one. You've got Chicago, where they're going to be starting over. It seems like Justin Fields is going to be shipped off somewhere before the end of the offseason. You just don't have, right now, the level of competition among the other teams in the NFC North to where the Lions can just really can kind of sneak in there and be the team that is the undisputed champ of the NFC North for a couple of years. Like, right now is the window. Like, now it's open. And you have to capitalize while that's there because you don't know when you're going to get that again. Like, the Packers could go back to being the Packers of old, you know, in relatively short order. The Vikings might figure it out. The Bears might even figure it out. Crazier things have happened. But right now, the less you have to try and rebuild on the fly when it comes to your offense, the more we can start worrying about fixing the defense on this team. And I've talked a bit about candidates I want to see brought here on that side. Like, if L'Jarius Sneed really isn't going back to KC, do whatever you got to do to bring him here. Or really stick it to the Bears and take Jalen Johnson from them. Or even make a signing like Chase Young in the offseason. Like, the more you get things locked in and situated on the offensive side, of course, there's already been talk that there's an extension that works, or at least Amon-Ra St. Brown's agent's been having conversations with the Lions. So the quicker you resolve these issues, we can start building up the defense and really firming up that side of the ball. And the Goff extension does not really impact your ability to do something like that. $40 million a year for a franchise QB at this point is not, it's not terrible. It's not by any means the end of the world. Like, you look at some of the QBs that are making less than what this deal would be. Like, it's pretty crazy when you look at it. Like, he'd be making arguably the same amount of money, give or take, as, well, let's see, currently as Prescott is. He'd be making about the same money as Daniel Jones, a guy that I don't think anyone would be handing out a back-breaking contract to at this point in his career. Like, this isn't terrible money. In fact, it's quite a deal if you can get it done. I'm entirely on board with it. If that's all you've got to pay out to keep Goff in Detroit, I feel like that is money that is well spent. Much to do today. We'll get to the college football stuff coming up next, something that I am rather irritated about, to say the least. It seems like we're kind of putting the cart before the horse when it comes to this sport, and we'll talk about it next. It is Happy Hour. Stick around. We'll be back right after this. It is Happy Hour, and the landscape of college football really has changed significantly just since this time last year. I mean, you basically have the Pac-12, which is now dead, the Big 12, which was going to be dead, and somehow has found a way to survive mostly by raiding what was left of the Pac-12 after the SEC and Big 10 picked that carcass clean. And you basically have now two super conferences and then just everybody else. But the biggest change for a lot of people was college football playoff expansion.
Playoffs?
As you'll remember, last year, college football playoff approved an expansion to 12 teams that would go into effect after this coming season. Before we even get to that, apparently there's already talk of expanding it further. We haven't done it once with 12 teams, but now they're talking 14.
What's two more? But it's not this season coming up. It's the following season.
2026, it would be. And what's being talked about there, I mean, you know why they're doing it. They're eventually going to push it to 16, and that's going to be presumably the end of it. Which, I don't know why you didn't just put 16 out there in the first place. Like, if you're already going to start changing it before it actually happens, why not just go for what you want in the first place instead of doing this gradual incremental, well, we're going to start talking about moving our way up. Because, you know, the second 14 gets approved, they're going to start talking about 16. Meanwhile, we haven't had 12 happen yet.
Right. Well, we've known that expansion had to happen. I think everybody was tired with the same four teams in there. It was almost like they were making excuses to get Bama in there and Clemson and Auburn. And then you'd have like the random team that doesn't make it often, just to keep things interesting.
But you'd have a team that goes 13-0 and somehow doesn't make it into the playoff.
Like, right.
Never again, you know, under a 12 or more team scenario will we have a team that, okay, they clearly deserve to be playing for a title and they're not. Like, this more or less takes that problem away for good.
And it needed to. I mean, there's so many college teams. The fact that they've waited this long to expand, they might as well go with 16, because, I mean, how many college teams are there? 64? I know that.
A lot more than that.
It's
like, you're probably talking at this point just 64 in the Big Ten and SEC alone by the time all is said and done. But, you know, just among your Power 5 schools.
Right. But so it needs to happen.
I mean, it does need to happen, but then what's with all the half measures then? Just go for the thing you want right off the jump and let's just be done with this. But, of course, naturally the players in power here are trying to make things as favorable for them as possible. A person aware of the discussions told The Athletic a 3-3-2-2-1 model would feature three automatic spots each for the Big Ten and SEC, with those two leagues champions earning the two first-round byes, two each for the Big 12 and ACC, and one for the Group of Five, along with three at-large spots.
Well, right off the bat, I got a problem with two bye weeks. I mean, if you can imagine your team rolling and then having to take 2 weeks off.
Two teams would have a bye.
Oh.
The Big Ten champ and the SEC champ would automatically get a first-round bye.
I thought you said the top of each division, each conference would have two byes for each team.
Nope.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
Two first-round byes. One of each would be going to the champs of the Big Ten and the SEC.
Gotcha. Okay.
And already this seems like a lot of stacking the deck further in favor of the two power conferences that remain. I'm not on board with it. Like, You're going to tell me that a team that wins its conference could still potentially get left out in the cold, so like the third best team in the Big Ten can make it automatically? Not a fan of that. Not a fan at all.
I would think that, and I don't know, there's probably all kinds of legalities against this, but if they're going to expand to 14 teams and eventually 16, that they need to break up some of these conferences that are getting too big.
Well, that's kind of the exact opposite of the way we're going, though. Like, you're not going to see, you know, breakups of conferences because right. You just had them expand. Like, the Big Ten's now got, like, 16, 18 teams, yep. 25, whatever it is. And SEC, much the same. Like, they're, if anything, they're in position to potentially push for, if they don't get a lot of what they want, that they could just break off entirely mm-hmm. and do their own thing between the two of them. But to me, I don't see how it makes any sense that, you know, we should have favored conferences in this. I mean, I know you've got your Power Five and your Group of Five, and that just is kind of what it is. But as far as, well, more like Power Four now, the Pacs, you can't really say you're a power anything when your conference consists solely of Washington State and Oregon State.
Right.
But I don't think that this is something that should be allowed by the NCAA or the College Football Playoff Committee. Like, I don't think it's going to be ultimately necessarily, but they're going to try and push for all the breaks that they can get. In a perfect world here, the conference champions from all the leagues, all the conferences, I should say, get in, and then everything else is at-large bids. You can make an argument, possibly for the runner-ups of the Power Four or whatever conferences are left. I could see that potentially, but honestly, I think more than one automatic bid for any conference is really just going to, it's going to cause more issues than it's going to solve. It's going to fracture this thing more, and honestly, very well could lead to the implosion of the college football playoff and NCAA system really as we know it. Like, you can't start just handing out bids to certain conferences because you value them more. Like, that's not, that shouldn't be how that works. That's not to this point how that works. I mean, yeah, do the conferences, have they been basically favoring the SEC and Big Ten for the longest time? Oh, yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. You know, minus the Clemson that might get in from time to time. That's how it's been unofficially. But I feel that to codify that into the rules on an official basis is going to cause a lot more issues than it's going to solve. Like, you can't have this, the whole the favored nation status with the Big Ten and the SEC. Like, you guys get more breaks. In fact, your champions will get to have a first round bye because we like you better than all these other garbage teams. Like, give automatic bids to, you know, whatever conferences, obviously the Power Four and a couple of your Group of Five schools for winning their championships. And then the rest is just whatever the selection committee deems are the best teams that given year. I don't like this idea of attributing more automatic bids in every year to a particular conference, especially when you're only talking about, well, for right now, 14, probably going to be 16 teams by the time all is said and done. I just don't feel like that's going to be good for the health of the sport long term. And that's honestly something that kind of gets left behind. Like, everyone wants to, you know, take all the money that's available right now and damn the consequences further down the road. It seems like there's a lot of that going on with some of these deals that get reached. And, you know, the networks are pulling a lot of influence on this behind the scenes as well. Like, they want those TV deals they just signed with all these conferences. They want them to go and be worth as, the, you know, the maximum amount possible, and they want to get the most return on their investment, and I get that. But I feel like they almost have too much pull and too much influence as to the actual decisions being made from this standpoint by the CFP committee and by the NCAA and whoever else. And I just don't think long-term it's good for the sport.
Well, they'll try it, and I'm sure there's going to be some tweaking to go. To be done.
There's a lot of tweaking to be done, certainly. But I think absolutely, at the very least, you can't do multiple bids for, unless you're doing like a runner-up for each Power Four. But even then, that kind of leaves you, you've got your group of five. So that would leave you ultimately with like five at-large bids if you were to do just the conference champions. So then that basically would only leave you with like one at-large bid total if you gave a second spot to any of the Power Four conferences. And I don't think anyone's going to be happy about that. I can tell you Notre Dame's not going to be happy about that. Like, oh, so there's only one at-large bid, and we have to fight against every SEC team and every Big Ten team at a minimum to even get a chance to sniff that. Seems a bit sus, if you ask me.
Hey, so join a conference.
Yeah, but they're going to hold on that as long as they can, as long as there's the TV deal for them. Although there's another place where I guess NBC, now that they're in bed with the Big Ten, could try and steer them that way. Like, this contract's not going to be here waiting for you. Guess you better join a conference. But then they'll lose Notre Dame altogether when they go and join like the SEC or the Big East or something.
Yeah.
And then that will have really worked out well for them.
Wait a minute. What just happened?
It is happy hour at your local alternative South State Radio. Stick around. It is happy hour. It's once again time for our favorite bit we do all week, Sean and Adam's Unsolicited Advice.
Woohoo!
Where real people with real problems send real questions to real advice columnists. Unfortunately, we get our hands on, we intercept, and I think we do this better than the people who get paid to do it for a living.
I do too.
Granted, a few lives may be ruined in the process, but, you know, that's the price of doing business.
If they're asking strangers, I think their life's already ruined.
You're not wrong about that. Let's dive right in, shall we? And this one will be fun. It's a nice little parenting question for you. And I know as the resident parent of this show, you'll probably have a little bit to say about this.
Dear Spank them. Oh, sorry.
I don't think that's quite the answer you're going to be looking for here. Dear somebody who cares, my daughter-in-law is a very private person, which I like to think I do a good job of respecting. She's a stay-at-home mom to my toddler grandson, and she invites me over to babysit once or twice a week. My issue is that my daughter-in-law never tells me where she's going. This drives me crazy for three reasons. First, on a personal level, I'd like to have a friendly relationship with my daughter-in-law. And what are you up to today seems like a banal conversation that even a private person can answer, at least vaguely. Second, I feel a little used that she's willing to take advantage of my free babysitting, but not have a conversation about her day. Finally, sometimes I have things I'd like to do on the days she wants me to babysit, which I would be happy to skip if she has an important appointment, but not if she just wants to go get a manicure. I want to say that I won't babysit anymore unless I know where she is, but that feels petty, and I don't want to risk the time with my grandson. I have to accept this, don't I? But it's weird, right?
You can't force somebody to tell you where they're going. She's an adult. I mean, I think it'd be polite of her. I think she does. I always tell Dorothy wherever I'm going. I mean, if there's something that happens and you haven't seen me in a couple of days, you know, well, he said he was going here.
That's your wife, not your mother-in-law. Yeah, though.
I know, but I mean, I don't know. It's, I think if you have something important to do, tell her. It's like, listen, I can't babysit. I got something important to do. And that's just the way it is. And, well, I've got something to do, too. It's like, well, you never tell me where you're going. So, I mean, if it bothers you that much, I guess, you know, just make the decision for yourself. But you can't make her tell you where she's going. That's not how this works.
Quite frankly, I think it's a little weird that you're that obsessed with it.
It's probably she's making a mountain out of a molehill.
She's being nosy is what she's doing.
Yeah.
Here's an idea. Mind your own business. How difficult is that?
Right.
Like, it's none of your business where she goes when you're babysitting the kid. That has nothing to do with the kid, doesn't have anything to do with you.
Like, she comes back staggering drunk, smelling of cheap cologne.
Well, you know, she's entitled to do that.
Not if she's with her son.
Well, if she's with her son at home, like, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. She'll be fine.
I mean married to... And then, you know, he's off at work, and she's like, "Hey, you know, you need to watch the kid. I got a boyfriend. I got to go see."
Okay, well, I apparently overlooked the boyfriend part.
I mean,
she's drunk. She's drunk. Whatever. But for real, like, it's really kind of a weird thing that, like, I need to know where you're going. Like, you're trying to force a friendship that she clearly doesn't want. Like, Maybe she does just view you as free babysitting, and you want to be involved in this kid's life. Like, you want to babysit the kid.
Yep.
But, you know, she's like, I don't want to risk the time with my grandson by forcing the issue. Then don't.
Right.
Like, if you have something that's more important that you need to do, then that's fine. Then don't babysit. Don't make the offer. If you're trying to use that as a backdoor way into snooping on every aspect of your daughter-in-law's life, then you're the weirdo. Sorry. You right. just are. She's allowed to have a life
yep.
that you're not a part of.
Exactly.
Like, if you're so offended by her using you for free babysitting, then don't babysit the kid, and then she'll find someone else to do it who won't ask a bunch of prying questions about what she's doing and who she's doing it with as a grown adult.
I think she's worried about ticking off the daughter-in-law to where she won't be able to see her grandson.
She should be worried about that, because that's what's going to happen if she tries to press the issue, as well it should.
I think pretty clean cut.
I would say so. Let's move on to another one, shall we?
Yes.
Dear, does anyone actually still read these? I have a 12-year-old daughter, Kayla, from a previous relationship. Kayla's dad is not in our lives. I also have a 6-month-old son, Aiden, with my boyfriend. Becoming an older sister is not going smoothly for Kayla, and she often acts jealous or clingy about the time I spend with Aiden or my boyfriend. She's pouty about new chores and babysitting Aiden, which I guess is regular tween behavior, but with a new baby and a lot on my plate, I need her to grow up a little. She's nearly a teenager, so the clinginess is really weird. I was expecting her to start spreading her wings more. Also, one of her biggest complaints is that she doesn't get enough sleep because of Aiden's colic. I also don't get a lot of sleep. It's just part of having a new baby. Kayla's grandma on her dad's side, who's been involved in her life since Kayla was a toddler, lives nearby and offered to take her overnight during the school week so she can sleep better. Kayla's jumping at the chance, but I'm worried this will create a lot of extra work for me and might ruin our bond if she's already feeling so clingy. How do I balance my son's and my daughter's needs with my own?
So, if the daughter lives, who is it, her grandmother?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, if the daughter's the grandmother, it's more work for the writer? I don't get it. She wouldn't be able to have the daughter help out with a baby. That's well,
correct.
Well, you're the mom. I mean, it's...
That's your job. Yeah. Like, she's a 12-year-old kid. She's not there to basically be your live-in babysitter.
Now, it is well within your rights to ask your, you know, hey, I'm going to go take a shower, watch the baby. Hey, I'm going out to get the mail, watch the baby. Here, give the baby a bottle. But, I mean, as far as, oh, hey, I'm going to take a nap, you're on babysitting duty, and I gotta go over here, you're babysitting. Unless you're paying her.
She doesn't sound like she is. No. Like, she's just kind of expecting that to be part of the package here.
Well, I mean, the 12-year-old does have to understand that there's responsibilities when it comes to family, but... I mean, not to the point where it sounds like she's taking advantage of her.
And it sounds like she is. And then, and the weird thing about, oh, she's being so clingy. Like, your kid's almost a teenager. Be lucky that she still wants anything to do with you.
Yeah.
Because as you well know, once they turn teenager, they don't want anything to do with their parents.
No, they adapt the personality of a trapdoor spider. They just come out to feed. I've been experiencing this. I mean, the kids, my stepkids... the youngest one is 11. Now there's Joey, who is 14 months. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of focus on the baby. We've got to make sure we got to do this because of the baby. We got to do this because of the baby. We can't do this because of the baby. And to the point where we purposely, luckily, in our unique situation, we're fortunate that my mom loves the baby and has no problem taking Joey. And I tell Dorothy, this is a time that you spend time with the kids.
And doesn't expect a detailed accounting of when, what, and where you're going while you're while she's babysitting.
We have to fill out a form in triplicate. No. We don't have to say anything. The ankle bracelet tells her wherever we are. But I mean, there is going to be growing pains when you add a family member, especially when there's such a gap. This kid has only known her and her mom, and now her boyfriend, husband, whatever.
Boyfriend, apparently.
Baby daddy. There is going to be some growing pains, but you touched on it. I mean, she's going to be a teenager. Don't worry about it. There's going to be times where she, once she starts having friends outside the house and going on dates eventually and blah, 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 you're gonna relish that time where she wanted your attention to be clingy.
Right. It doesn't seem like at any point through any of this has this woman thought about her existing 12-year-old kid's needs. Like, at literally any point in time, other than what she can do for her, she doesn't want to be bothered with this other kid. Like, look, you're just here to be my free babysitter, and I don't really care anything about you other than that. It really comes off that way. Like, you're basically trying to rush her to being a little adult. Yeah. Like,
well, there is the thing of having her, the daughter, stay at the grandmother's house. The mom's probably like, listen, I'm the mom. She's supposed to be here. But I mean,
well, yeah, she can't sleep, and you apparently don't care that she can't sleep. Yeah. Like, well, that's part of having a kid. She didn't have a kid. You did.
Right. Put her in a different bedroom or have a different situation. Do you have the baby? She probably has the baby in the daughter's room.
I don't know if there is a situation in which, and there might not be a situation in which the kid's going to be quiet enough sleeping through the night, or where you're going to be able to have that kid far enough away that's not going to disturb their sleep.
Right.
Like, that just might not be a thing. Like, this was a commitment you made, not that your kid did.
Right.
And she is still a kid, even though you kind of want to rush her up to be, you know, the nanny.
Right. Yeah.
She's still a child. Yeah, she's 12 years old.
Yeah. The term tween is a relatively new term, but I mean, cause she's a kid, she's not a teenager yet. And even then it's not going to be her responsibility. I mean, unless you have a, arrangement with her to pay her, like there's times that we've utilized Scarlett, but we pay her. We don't skirt the responsibility. It's something that we work out between ourselves. But again, we don't leave for long periods of time. It's, you know, hey, I got to go to the store for a second. I got to go get the mail. You know, there's a lot of different situations.
Yeah, you're not also not just treating those kids as a burden on you and nothing more.
No, no, not at all.
So, I mean, you already sound like the parenting here is a lot better than it is with this person.
I'd like to think so.
Let's see one more of these, since we're kind of on this whole parenting tangent. Dear, does anyone actually still read these? My boyfriend and I are at an impasse. I own my own place, and he was trying to get back on his feet after the divorce. He has two small kids. My place is small and not child-friendly. He pays no rent and half the bills, but thinks it's completely okay for me to give up my home office for a bedroom for his kids, and pay for all the new furniture, and help with other expenses like private tutoring and sports activities. The thing is, I can only introduce myself as Dad's friend, and we need to sleep separately when, if the kids come over. We aren't even talking about marriage. Honestly, I think he should give up overnight visits and stick to seeing his kids in public places. Even just picking them up and dropping them off every day seems more doable than this. However, he is a great and devoted dad. When his eyes are on me, I feel like the most special woman in the world. He has had a hard time of it. Am I wearing rose-colored glasses here?
You're dating a father. He's always going to be a father first. I mean, that's just the facts. Now, he doesn't, but at the same time, he doesn't, why is he sugarcoating? Why is he making it sound like she's just a friend? Why is he skirting this, the fact that they are a romantic couple?
Because he's still trying to get back with the mother of the kids.
You think so? I mean, because that's kind of...
I kind of wonder.
That's kind of where I was leaning towards it, too. Or he's at least trying to play nice with the ex-wife. But, I mean...
I've seen a situation or two like this where,
he's moved on.
Where someone's, like, trying to keep the other parent still around and, you know, any other suitors aren't allowed to be known. Like, they're not allowed to know the existence of, like, you basically have to go away whenever this person's around. I've seen that happen.
Yeah, that's, she needs to address that first and foremost and then everything else. But then, yeah, say, listen, she is at an impasse with herself because she's dating a father who wants parental time with his kid, with his kids. But, I mean, giving up a room, buying new furniture that sounds like she's paying for, not him. That is a she's going to have to decide whether she can live with that or not. And if it's not, then she may have to say goodbye to the relationship.
And honestly, she probably should. Like, if you're expected to foot all the bills for his kids and also not be allowed to exist as his girlfriend,
yeah,
like,
that's...
and we have to just pretend that you're just some random person, but you're expected to front all the money for the kids to do stuff, that's not a relationship. That's you're being taken advantage of.
Yes.
Run. Run far, run fast.
No, don't run anywhere. Back. You live there. Make him run.
Yeah, you know, valid point. I meant for the relationship, not in the literal sense, I guess.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, you boot him out. You're clearly not in a relationship. You're being taken advantage of. You're basically the backup option until he reconciles with the mother of the kids. That's what you are. And the sooner you realize that and the sooner you get that out of your life, the happier you'll be.
Exactly.
Hope this helps. Let's hit a break. It is happy hour at Solid State Radio. It is happy hour. And, well, I can't really use the hey, hockey town today because the Wings did lose last night. But, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey.
Hockey night in Canada. Yes, yes, the Wings, the winning streak is over.
I blame those new stickers on the jerseys. They put a literal trash ad on the jerseys, and they start playing like garbage. Coincidence? No.
You know what? A lot of people are tongue-in-cheek about that, but there's some validity to it. Hockey players are one of the most superstitious athletes. I think baseball comes in at a close second, but... hockey players, they are superstitious. So all of a sudden, they've got this new patch on there. It's going to take, like Dylan Larkin, the C is on the other side. Did you even see him on the score sheet? I'm going to look. But it looked weird having the captain C and the...
It's wrong.
It's wrong. All kinds of wrong.
I don't like anything about it. Like, it just threw off everything. Like, you don't go and change the jersey in the middle of a winning streak.
No, you don't.
That's just stupid.
Yeah. I mean, priority... If you guys are like really cool, you guys really want to support the team, understand this. You don't start at the beginning of next season.
Or put the sticker on the other side of the helmets. I mean, you've already got the one logo up there. Why not just put one on the other side? Then that way everyone's happy and we're not tampering with the jerseys in a critical time for this team.
Yeah.
We're a week away from the trade deadline. We can't afford right now to have anything that's going to derail the odds that Stevie might make a move for the good here.
Instead of blowing the whole team up. Oh, there will be no blowing up of the team. But, I mean, and by the way, Dylan Larkin did get an assist last night on Patrick Kane's goal that tied it up 2-2. I mean, that Islanders game, it was quite equal. I mean, except for the first period. The first period, Brock Nelson and Cizikas both scoring in the first period. Alimata in the second. You got Patrick Kane and Alimata again. In the third, but Brock Nelson could not be contained.
Sadly.
Matthew Barzal and then Pierre Engvall with a very respectful empty netter as opposed to the one that ticked off Morgan Riley.
That whole thing was just stupid. I'm sorry. Like, if you, like, you, that's all premeditated all day. Like, you let him score, then follow the guy to the other end of the ice and cross-check him. Like, drop the gloves. Don't be the guy, like, don't take a cheap shot with a weapon.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing I have. Like, I don't care that's, you know, the unwritten rules, it's disrespectful, whatever. Whatever. You want to have an issue with it, that's fine. Yep. I don't care.
Yep.
I think it's a stupid thing to get upset over, but
yep.
At least drop the gloves. Be a man. Fight. Mano a mano.
Yep.
Actually, don't go and check a guy in
into the boards
with your stick.
Did we ever? I lost track. Did he?
He did end up getting suspended, I believe. I think they've appealed it, but
oh yeah, they gave him the 5 games.
Yeah,
yeah.
As well, they should have.
Yeah, yeah. He earned that one. But you know, also it's kind of like showboating when you hit a home run.
Calm down. Fine with that too, though. I am the guy.
You just want to see the world burn.
I do want to see the world burn. I like it when my athletes actually have emotion and feel things when they do well.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. I'm not this. Everything has to be buttoned down, straight laced. Hand the ball back to the ref. Like It doesn't. I don't feel like my sports experience always has to be that.
Yeah.
I'm entirely fine with you know, a little bit of emotion from my athletes.
But something happened to the Red Wings last night. They were coughing up the puck. They were not passing right. Shots were going wide. I think they might be a little gassed, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by that. They've been on such tear lately.
I mean, we know that Derek Lalonde is not big on moving the goaltender, but after those two goals, I probably would have made a change. I mean, after two goals, but it just seemed like Lyon was sluggish. The whole team looked sluggish, but I mean, except for Patrick Kane, who just is apparently just going to score every single. He's going to score 81 goals next season if he re-signs with the Wings. 82 games, excuse me. 82 goals. They played like garbage. You touched on it. They're not priority health. They got that patch on priority
waste.
Waste management. Bada boom, bada bing. Too many Sopranos episodes.
Right. Like, I just hate the symbolism from the start. We're putting trash, you know, a trash collector on the jerseys.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing that always got me. I mean, I'm not a fan. I wasn't going to be a fan of any ad, let's be honest.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the 1976 Bad News Bears, when he had to get endorsements for the jerseys, and the only one available was Bail Bondsman. The kids trying their very best with Bail Bonds on the back of their jerseys.
Like, there's just no good that comes from any of this.
And then it gets better. It's like the 2005 Billy Bob Thornton version. There's a strip club on the back. Anyway, I digress.
Oh, yeah, I guess at least you didn't have that, but this isn't much better. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. Skating around, got cheetahs.
Oh, there's so many apologies we should probably hand out.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
While we figure out what all those are, let's do a little bit of reckless speculation, shall we? Because that's what we do best on this show.
That's my favorite form of speculation.
Maestro, the music, please.
John Buchagross right now. The Detroit Red Wings are taking on the Colorado Avalanche. No love lost between these two teams. All the 90s hockey. Bring it back.
Oh, where's Gary Thorne and Bill Clement when you need them?
Oh, my God. I used to hate Gary Thorne with a fiery, hot passion because I accused him of being such an Avalanche lover, but I caught him doing play-by-play for college baseball. I would love to hear him call hockey again.
I you realize just how bad it can get.
Don't know what you got. No, I mean...
But really.
Yeah, right.
So I've got a couple, a list or two here for you. Some trade deadline targets for the Red Wings. Do a little bit of buy or sell.
Okay.
I'll give you the name. You tell me if you're buying or selling
on
these.
Well, it's going to be a lot of sell because I'm going to say that Yzerman's going to probably stay on pad. But I also said that for free agency, and Yzerman end up picking up everybody. Everybody got in the back of the pickup truck.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be a can they, should they, will they, like however you, whatever approach you'd like to take with
okay,
it.
All right.
The first name is the other name I've been very high on from the Calgary Flames. Obviously, Chris Tanev got traded to the Dallas Stars the other day, but Noah Hanifin.
Yeah, you texted me. I didn't even know Tanev went to Dallas, and I was like, you're like, I could hear you sobbing through text. That was weird. You wanted Tanev bad.
I did, but I would settle for Hanifin. He's 27 years old. He's an 8-year vet in the league, a solid two-way player. He's been in the league from the time he was 19, but they've made it clear in Calgary that they're in sell mode.
They are. What happened in Calgary? Two seasons ago, they were talking about them being major contenders, and now it's just a fire sale. Get rid of everybody.
So he's a left-handed shot. He starts on the top power play unit. He's registered 9 goals and 17 assists in 50 games this season. He's a plus 11.
That is where Stevie really needs to bolster, is on the blue line. Hanifin, maybe I'm suffering from Kenny Holland disease because I don't recognize this guy's name. I mean, I've heard you talk about him.
Because he's been languishing in Calgary.
Yeah. That's what it is. So I don't know. I mean, if we got him as highly touted as he is from you, I would be happy. So I'm buying.
I'm buying, too, if Stevie can get him signed to a long-term deal. Because he's a free agent, unrestricted after this season.
See, that's a big thing, because you don't want to give up too much for a cat like that, because he has just wasted a lot of his career in Calgary. He's as much as Detroit. I'm not trying to bash the Red Wings. I am not. But he's going to want to go to... He's going to want to go to a New York team, New York Rangers. He's going to want to go to Vegas, some team that can get him a cup.
But if he sees that contender being built here in Detroit, I think you could talk him into it.
I would think so. I mean, here is the architect of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who has been arguably the powerhouse within the last six seasons, correct? So I think,
absolutely.
I think he and his agent is probably like, you know, this may not be a bad situation. So I it's a gamble. It's totally a gamble. But anyway, I'm buying.
I am absolutely buying as well. If, like I said, if you can get him interested in signing an because if he doesn't think he can get Hanifin signed,
yeah,
he's not going to make the trade. He's not going to give up actual assets for a rental player.
Right.
Marcus Pettersson, left-handed defenseman for the Penguins. He's not known for his offensive skills, but at 6'4", he fits Yzerman's profile, a long, lengthy defenseman who weighs in at a slender 176 pounds. Doesn't shy away from contact. He can be trusted to defend the opposing team's top line. He won't be a free agent until after the 25-26 season. He does have a no-trade clause, however.
Of course he does.
But he might be willing to waive that if he doesn't think Pittsburgh's going anywhere this year.
And I don't know why everybody is dogging on Pittsburgh. They still have two great players in Crosby and Malkin. Yes, they're getting long in the tooth. Yes, of course. But
it's because they're the core of the team is aging so much.
Yeah.
And there just isn't a whole lot coming in to replace it. Also, they're currently sitting second to last in the Metropolitan Division.
Are they ahead really?
They're ahead of only Columbus.
Wow. I would say look for a trade from Crosby before too long.
You know as well as I do, Crosby and Malkin are going to be Pens for life.
Yes,
That's just how that is.
Yes, they are.
But it seems like your core is really around a lot of guys who are getting kind of up there in age. Like, who's your next guy after beyond Letang, Malkin, and Crosby?
Gunsel,
who is almost 30.
And he's looking to move.
And they were talking to potentially move him. So I think Pettersson could be had for the right price.
He's not the Pettersson I want.
Well, no, but I don't think that Pettersson's moving from Vancouver, unfortunately.
It sounds like he wants. He wants out. But I mean,
I'd be fine.
Another conversation for another time.
Vancouver is currently sitting atop the Pacific Division, so I don't think they're going to move him if they don't feel they absolutely have to.
Right.
So, but I could see the Wings doing a lot worse for another defenseman. Although we got burned last time we traded with the Pens for a defenseman, Atlanta's Jeff Petrie, and how'd that go for us?
Is that where we got him from? I thought we got him from the Habs. No, we got him free agency.
Well, he started. Well, no, it was a trade, but he had ended up with. I am 90% certain on this. Yeah, he was with Pittsburgh when we traded for him.
I thought he was a free agent, I swear.
Nope. What did we give up for him? If we gave up anything, it was too much. We gave up a bag of pucks, it was too much. Oh, no, so he was traded. There was a trade with the Penguins and the Canadiens, and then like a week later, we traded Lindstrom and a fourth-round pick for him.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I would rather have Lindstrom.
Yeah, same. Up next, and this is one I think I know how we're both going to go on this. I would buy on Pettersson for what it's worth, but I don't think that they're going to be willing to give up what it's going to take there. Jacob Chychrun.
Absolutely. And I think that is very much in Stevie's wheelhouse.
We could have had him if it wasn't for the fact that Holland needed to offload Datsyuk's contract. That I could still just. Instead, we got Dennis Chalowski, who.
Chalowski, that's. I was trying to think. I was like. Because at first, I was a Cholo fan. I should probably reword that. A Chalowski fan. But yeah, he had.
Although you did get a second round pick that ended up being Phil Peronic, so it wasn't all a loss, but still.
Which is now. He's off in Vancouver.
Correct.
And they love him over in Vancouver.
So he's a guy who's flashed brilliance on both ends of the ice at times, but also comes with some questionable knee issues that have required multiple surgeries in the past. When healthy, he's a two-way defender who doesn't shy away from contact and has more offensive prowess than Pettersson and Hanifin combined. He also has no trade clause and a cap hit of 4.6 mil through the 25-26 season. But he's a gamble.
I mean, yeah,
is he a gamble you're willing to make by yourself?
I'm buying. I've liked Chychrun ever since. I mean, but he was playing for what, Arizona for the longest time, losing a lot of his life in Arizona. But I mean, as far as the money is concerned, it's not my money. I mean, the Wings have like 16 mil in cap space, so it's like, do it. Pull the trigger and try to get him to extend.
Here's one for you. This one's a little cheaper of an acquisition. The scenario is Detroit trades a 2025 fifth rounder to the Minnesota Wild for defenseman Zach Bogosian. Cheap defensive depth, basically.
Yeah. Zach Bogosian, well-known name, did well with Winnipeg.
Did well with Tampa Bay.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's part of two of those Stanley Cup final teams.
How old is he, though?
He's got to be getting up there. He's been around for a minute. But he does bring you playoff experience. He is...
Yes, yeah, that
is 33.
True. He's 33. 33, okay. No, I'm definitely buying on Zach Bogosian. Absolutely.
Here's another one. Now, this one is the first non-defenseman that's come up on this list.
Okay.
From the Columbus Blue Jackets, Detroit theoretically would be trading a 2024 third round pick to acquire from the Columbus Dumpster Fire Blue Jackets Jack Roslovic.
Who? Never heard of him.
He's a forward who can play center and the wing. He's a versatile player. He's played up and down the lineup this season in Columbus and on both special teams. He can play both center and on the wing, which is something that Derek Lalonde has been asking for. Apparently, on a radio interview not too long ago, he asked for his wish about potential trade deadline acquisitions would be, quote, probably another versatile forward, someone who can play center and the wing. He's averaging a half a point per game this season. He's only 27 years old. Buy or sell?
I'm selling. Yeah, I mean, he's doing well with Columbus, but that's because he's on Columbus. I mean, I have a feeling that he would just be playing a disappearing act if he was on the Red Wings roster.
He's a pending free agent also, for what it's worth. You wouldn't have to give up more than a late rounder for him, more than likely.
Well, if that's the case...
But I'm not sure how necessary he really is. I mean, he's kind of comparable to Christian Fisher in a lot of ways. Like, he's, you know, former first-round pick. He's a big guy. Good skill player, but inconsistent offensively.
Yeah. And the Red Wings really, I've been hearing how much the roster really loves Christian Fisher. And this is something that we need to discuss, is that we've been hearing about the current Red Wings team, the big word, operative word, is chemistry. There's a lot of good chemistry on that team, and I was worried that Patrick Kane would disrupt that, but no, he is filled right in. So if you bring in a cat like Bogosian or the guy we were just talking about, would it disrupt that? But I guess that's
as far as Bogosian goes, it's a depth signing, really, or depth trade, I guess. But you've already got Justin Hall, who you're not using. You've got Simon Evanson basically waiting in the wings here. Like, I imagine he's going to end up getting called up after the Griffins and their playoff run, just for the fact that you're going to need to get him some minutes up here so he's ready to go in next season, when he's going to be expected to be the guy. Because I imagine what's going to happen is they're going to let Gostisbehere walk and hopefully find something to do with Hull and Petrie.
Right. The guy I want... you want to continue?
No, that's all I've got over here.
There's one guy.
Throw out your name.
Jordan Eberle, forward, Seattle Kraken, 33. He's a right winger, and I've always been a Jordan Eberle fan. Big fan of him. I would love to see him. Maybe the Wings can pick him up in free agency in July, but wow, Jordan Eberle.
Seattle's not trading, that's for sure. I mean, they're I believe currently in a playoff spot. It's not like they're going to be looking to move anybody.
NHL.com has him as a possibility. Another possibility is Anthony Mantha,
Seattle is currently sitting outside of a playoff spot at the moment, but you know they're actually tied with Calgary. Wow.
Yeah.
What a difference a season makes, apparently.
Yeah, right? He's having a down year offensively on pace for fewer than 20 goals, but the cost to acquire him with the hope that he finds his touch should be exorbitant, according to ESPN.
But if he's going to be a free agent this offseason, that's not the kind of... I don't think it's enough of a need to really be worth making the move.
Well, it is. I mean, because I'm reading
I guess if you're already talking a guy like Roslovic, you know...
I mean, is he a free agent? Because I'm reading this article from NHL.com, and I'm not seeing where he is going to be a free agent. So maybe he comes with a contract. I mean, I don't know. We'd have to find out. I mean, obviously, getting a forward would be nice, but defense is where we really need the help.
Yeah, I'd like to upgrade, you know, a second pairing defenseman here. I'd also just like to offload some of the like sixth pairing defenseman that we have. He is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. Everly is.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be a rental, and I guess it's at this point up to you whether you think that's something that's worth doing.
No,
I'm not so sure.
I mean, I like Jordan Eberle. I'm an Eberle fan. But
I know you are.
It'd be a rental. How much would it cost to get him? Probably pretty high.
High-ish. Like I would assume like a second or third rounder.
Second round's pretty juicy. I mean, that's a spicy draft pick, and I don't know if I want to give it up for a guy we're only going to have for a couple of months.
Unless you really think you're going to be able to resign him, but I don't know that that's necessarily the guy that you're trying to commit to long term.
I guess I'm thinking out loud here. Are they allowed to talk to somebody and say, hey, we want to trade for you? What are the chances of you wanting to re-sign with us in the off season? I mean, are they allowed, or is that considered a big no-no?
Like there has to be some consideration given to that, I would think. I don't remember what exactly the rules on tampering are, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, that probably would be considered tampering.
We'll look that up and figure that out as we get closer to the trade deadline next Friday. Let's hit a break. We'll close this thing out next. It is Happy Hour. Stick around. Hours we get out of Dodge here on a Friday afternoon and get set to enjoy what's looking to be a pretty nice weekend. I'm probably gonna be chilling out on the patio listening to some Tiger baseball.
Woo!
Tigers won today, of course, over the the Phillies by a score of 4-2. They'll be taking on Pittsburgh tomorrow, 105. You can hear the game over on the Voice of the Thumb, 97.7 WTGV, the home for Tiger baseball all season long. We have word today, apparently, Tarek Skubal getting the start for opening day, which well-deserved by him. That has been a rough year for that man, to say the least of it. Like, he started last year on the injured list. He was rehabbing from surgery on a left elbow flexor tendon, and then came back, was just dominant in the second half, and he's getting rewarded for that with the start on opening day in Detroit, which, well, the plan is you and I are going to be down there.
That is the plan, yeah.
So you are coming with, right? You're not going to forget until the last minute and just like, oh wait, that was today, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I got to put it for the day off. But yeah, I mean, just going back to work on Monday after like having 3 weeks off from a knee injury. So, you know, I'm off the LTIR.
That's good. We're all glad to have you back. Yeah. Certainly, I'm sure. Just in time to then take time off for St. Patrick's Day, opening day, all the important stuff, right?
Yes.
Exactly. I mean, got to get that knee all healthy because we're going to be wandering around downtown Detroit, probably crashing River Fury's broadcasting that for opening day, live at Comerica Park or whatever.
Yeah, you got.
We're going to find ourselves have our own program director remove us, get us from security to remove us from the stadium. But that's all we need.
But Eddie, we know you. Yeah, get him out of here. Go on, get.
Never met those guys in my life. Oh, on that note, we got a little bit of housekeeping to take care of. In our weekly attempt to cleanse our souls, Happy Hour would like to apologize to Dorothy, Wendy's, Chi-Chi's, Chili's, Outback, Canadians, the state of Arizona, Winnipeg, Mormons, Cheetahs, and Eddie Fury, we're sorry! On that note, stick around because coming up next, a full hour of local original
dance moves.
That's what it is. I knew I'd get it right eventually.
Dance moves.
No, Sessions is up next.
Yeah, the Commissar is going to be in studio. I've known Matt Thick for many, many years. He's got a new project, newer project called the Commissar. He's going to come up there. Now, here's this twist. I don't think we're playing any recorded music. They're playing everything live tonight.
Oh, very cool. So he's going to show up and do some live picking here in studio?
Yes, he is.
It should be a good time all the way around. Well, I'm rather looking forward to this.
Yep, he plays the bagpipes. It's going to be great.
Well, I will just make sure to mysteriously disappear from the studio by then.
Bagpipes is a terrible... My Irish roots, I know it's Irish / Scottish, but I hate the bagpipes.
I'm not a fan either. Like, on St. Pat's, there's a place in Davison that we always used to kick off the morning at, and we always have roving bagpipers. Like, no. No.
They're loud. Oh, my God. I mean, I like the sound of them in some songs, like Long Way to the Top from AC/DC, but, I mean... To hear them live, they are a loud instrument.
Yes, they are. Sessions up next. I'll be well. Talk to you Monday at 3. See ya.